It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. Mark is running the show, as always. If you have a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. Mark, you watching House of Cards? Have you binge-watched the episodes yet? You're not into it? Really? I love it. I don't know. It's probably not as good as it used to be, but I still love it. Sort of addicted to it. I have the worst personality for binge watching because I desperately want to keep watching the episodes, but I fall asleep, and therefore, like, you know, they just start again and again, and I miss so much. So then I have to watch it over. All right. You need some financial help? We got some help for you. Just get in touch with us, okay? And don't forget that if you're looking for a financial planner, we always hear from you seeking that advice. You can always go to the Certified Financial Planning website, letsmakeaplan.org. Love that. Love those guys. Okay. Let's take a call. It's Mary who's on the line from Pennsylvania. Hi, Mary. Welcome to Jill on Money. What can I do for you?
Hi, Jill. It's Kentucky. It's not Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's what Mark told me. Said that you were from Pennsylvania. So I apologize. we love our friends in Kentucky. What can I do for you, Mary?
Jill, I just recently received a large inheritance over $100,000, and I've never had this much money before. Mm. I am 75 years old. I do have one child, and I just don't know what to do with it.
Tell me about what's going on in your life. Are you retired now?
I'm retired and I'm a widower.
And do you own your own home?
No, I rent.
And how do you support yourself? Do you collect Social Security or a pension?
Yes, Social Security only.
And how is your cash flow? Is that Social Security enough for you to live on?
Not really. I had a little money stashed away, which I needed to go into every now and then. And but now with this inheritance, I just don't know what to do.
When you say you had some money stashed away, is that just money that's in a bank account?
Yes.
How much is left in there?
I would say maybe $5,000.
Okay. And when you say you have to dip in, on a monthly basis, how much money do you think you need?
I usually dip in for about $150.
Okay. So I think the first thing to remember about this money that you've inherited is that it is money that you just don't want to invest. You really want to make sure it's there for you because, you know, it's like this crazy thing that people like you might get an inheritance and then you say, oh, I have to go invest it. Well, you don't have to invest it. In fact, I think the best thing for you to do is first and foremost is in the bank account. That of the 100, you said I had 100,000. I'm going to just use round numbers. So of the 100,000, I would immediately put another $15,000 in your bank account. So you've got $20,000 that's there. Then with the remaining $85,000, what I would do is I would buy a series of certificates of deposit. And you can do it through the bank or you can do it online. There's a wonderful website called depositaccounts.com. And what you want to do is you want to build what we call a CD ladder, meaning that you buy, let's say you put $10,000 or $15,000 in a one-year CD, then in a two-year CD, a three-year CD, and you stagger it. Now, what some people are going to listen to this and say, that's ridiculous. CD rates are so low. Why would you do that? I understand. The problem is that I think that it is much more important that we secure this money for you, money that you never counted on in the first place, than it is to grow this money. we only really need to make sure that you have, I'm going to even give you a raise instead of the $150 a month. I mean, you really only need to make sure that you have, say, $200 or $300 a month so that you have a little extra breathing room. So what this money that you have inherited will do is provide you with that breathing room. So therefore, it's really important that no matter what you do, that you keep this money safe, because this is your security blanket. So if you're at the bank and you're buying CDs and someone at the bank says to you, oh, you want to meet with a financial advisor? You say, absolutely not. If somebody tries to sell you an annuity, absolutely not. If someone tries to get you investing this money, absolutely not. This security blanket money will help you basically live your life in a more comfortable way, but there is no reason that any of this should be put at risk. There's no reason for you to have to pay any money to in a commission or in a fee for having someone to manage it. This is your safety net. And more importantly than anything else, do not let somebody try to sell you something with this money. It's going to be safe. It's going to be in your bank account or a credit union, in a CD. I honestly, like, if my choice was that you should just keep it in a bank account versus some shyster insurance salesperson selling you something, I would say keep it in a bank account. Safety, safety, safety. It's like location, location, location. So, Mary, thank you so much for calling. For anyone listening, if you've just come into an inheritance, if you're worried about what to do next, the very first thing that you ask yourself is, what is the best use of this money? In Mary's case, the best use of this money is to supplement her current income. And if you know you need money and you know you can't afford to risk any of it, to lose it, then you've got to be playing defense against an industry that tends to jump on top of a $100,000 nest egg like this and try to convince you that someone can do something better, different, otherwise with the money. And I know there's plenty of really great advisors out there. I'm sure they're wonderful people. That's all well and good. There's too many of the other type of folks who are just wanting to sell someone like Mary something. And oftentimes, that sales pitch comes right out of your own bank. So please, everyone, when you get something like this, a windfall, be very careful. Be on alert. All right. Thanks so much for calling, Mary. That was a good way for me to pounce on that issue for everybody. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. I know what
you're thinking. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I am Jill Schlesinger, and if you would like to get onto the program, a couple ways to get to us. Give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. So right now we've got Freddie who's on the line from Houston. Hello, Freddie. I hear we have something in common.
Hi, Jill. How are you?
That's right. We're both certified financial planner practitioners, but that you are practicing. You are actually in the business. I just hang on to those three letters because I never want to take the test again.
Well, I hear you, and I'm actually a CPA as well, so I'm do the same thing. I'm a CPA, but I don't really practice. I just hold on to it.
Now, let me ask you a question about that. So you're a CPA. Do you also have that PFS designation in addition to the CFP?
No, ma'am, just the CFP.
Okay. Because that one, that's an interesting designation, because I know that a lot of CFPs, CPAs have that one, which is basically like a CPA who I think is still practicing but also wants to do financial planning. But you did the CFP in addition. So very, very impressive, my friend. And I appreciate you reaching out because, frankly, I don't know, you probably don't need my help. You probably know exactly what you should be doing. So what brings you to us?
Well, you know, Jill, I'm a big fan of the call and the podcast, and I just wanted to make sure that we were doing the right thing, because I talked to my wife about our finances, and she's not a finance person. She's actually a doctor. She's a pediatrician. And quite frankly, she always gets on me because she thinks that we save too much. She thinks that I make her, she thinks that I make us as a family live below our means, which, you know, I think that's a good thing, but you know, she thinks we could probably spend a little more here and there, live a little more lavishly, probably can, but you know, with my background and where we grew up, both of us, and kind of what we want to do for our future, I've always kind of, what we're really trying to be aggressive on saving. And she basically thinks we save too much, but I'm saying, I tried to tell her it's for a reason. You know, we want to have a particular lifestyle in the future, and we have a daughter now. And so I just want to make sure that we're set financially. And if someone can back me up, if you're not going to listen to me, even though that's what I do for a living, well, that's what I need.
So I'm basically a marriage counselor right now. Essentially.
Well, in some ways, yes.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about you guys. So she's a doctor, you're a CFP. You have any kids?
Yes, ma'am. We have a 10-month-old daughter.
Wow, okay. And how is your cash flow right now that you, because you're making her live below your means, how much are you guys saving? What's going on in your financial life?
So we have annual income about $300,000 combined. That's only been going on for a few years. She just finished residency 3 years ago. So before that, it was pretty much myself and her residency salary, which is, you know, probably pretty low. But now we're doing pretty well, $300,000. So we're doing pretty good. We both maxed out our 401ks, and I have a 401k through work, and she has a 403b. So we're maxing out $18,000. Mine's actually a Roth 401k, which we just added that feature recently. So I changed it to that. And she has 457 capability as well. So I wouldn't say we max out the 457 because we're sort of using that pretty carefully because of the, it's not fully guaranteed. It's basically deferred comp. My understanding is if her company goes down, we could possibly lose that as well. So she's not a big fan of it. Mm-hmm. But we try to contribute between $10,000 and $15,000 a year to that as well. We both maxed out our Roth IRAs via backdoor Roth IRA contributions. We've only been doing that for about 3 years. So we each have $20,000 in Roth IRAs. My 401k is about $200,000. Her 403b is about $95,000, and her 457 is about $40,000.
So just want to understand something. So just in retirement accounts, you're saving about $50,000 a year. Is that about right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, got it. That's a good number. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Well, you know, we try to max out whatever we can. And the problem I have is, or the problem I'm seeing and with a lot of my clients is, once you've done all that, what do you do next? What can you possibly do to save more? Like, you know, best tax-wise and all that.
Okay.
That's where we are.
So in that $50,000, I mean, so you're saving in that. Is there other saving that you're doing? Are you putting money away for college for the kiddo?
Yes, ma'am. So when she was born, we created a Fidelity 529 plan, and I did the calculation or through their website. And in order to pay for half of her private school college tuition, they forecast that we should save $500 a month for, you know, from now until she goes to school. So we started that, and there's about $7,000 in that currently. So automatic monthly $500 deposit to that. And
what else besides? Sorry, you got the retirement, then you have the education, and is there any other money that you're putting into sort of on an absolute like monthly basis? It's going this much money. Anything else that's going into savings or investing in addition to that?
Yes, ma'am. We have one more account through a Betterment account that I've been using for about 4 years. And now we deposit twice a month, $850 each month, or twice a month, $850. So $1,700 total automatically out of our checking account to that Betterment account. So it's about $25,000 a year as well.
You're saving a lot, man. I mean, well, you are. You really are. But yeah, but so let me ask you this. If you, I mean, you know how to do a calculation. If you're looking at just your 50 grand a year plus the amount of money that you already have saved in your retirement accounts, are you on track to meet your retirement needs, or are you overfunding retirement?
Well, that's the issue. So I've gone to a couple different retirement planners online. You know, I use the Betterment one, and I've done the one through our Fidelity website, and now I actually use Personal Capitals as well, just to see, and they all kind of give you different numbers, but most of them all say you know, so if they give you a score, I'm like 95% or 100%, you know, 95%, they give you a rating. And let's say you're 95%, you're doing great, you're doing better than your peers, all that. So I feel pretty good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Some say I could have $4 million in my account. Some say I could have $10 million in my account within 30 years. So it's kind of across the board, depending on, you know, the system and the application. I do feel like we're doing really good and we should be along the way, but mm-hmm. that's in retirement. You know, my wife is like, hey, we want to maintain some flexibility to, you know, have some for maybe a bigger house down the future or something. So I'm looking for that right mix of retirement versus maybe potential, you know, bigger taxable account, or, you know, to have for more liquidity purposes.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that brokerage account that you have is kind of that slush fund account. I mean, you're saving a bunch of money. And it seems to me that you're doing a really good job retirement-wise. But, I mean, are you living, when you say, like, oh, I make my, you know, I make us live below our means, are you, is, how can I put this in a nice way? Are you being, like, a little bit overzealous in the saving, to the extent that, like, you're artificially creating pressure that does not need to be there? That's what I want to know, on the cash flow itself.
Yeah, yeah. I do not think the pressure's there. My wife doesn't pay any bills. She buys what she wants. Luckily mm-hmm. for me, she's pretty, you know, she's not a big spender. She's not a big shopper. We don't buy expensive clothes. We don't really eat out at fancy restaurants. The big thing that we like to do is travel. And mm-hmm. so that's our sort of thing that we do. We don't mind spending on travel.
Okay.
And I don't think that I create the environment or the pressure that we're saying, oh, we're not doing this because we're saving. Although she would say that I do sometimes, I honestly don't feel like that's the case, because we do whatever we want to do. But I, you know, my always number one goal is, you know, don't affect the savings. We do that automatically. It's like, you know, that's the first thing that comes out of our paychecks. And, you know, I think we're doing fine all across the board. I guess just the confirmation is good to hear.
Yeah, I think you're doing great. And I think that if I were you, and just like managing this with your wife, because you are doing this yourself, I would show her the calculators. I would show her the retirement plan calculators. And I would really stress that brokerage account is an account that's, call it, tell her that's our freedom account. That's our travel account. That's our house account. That's where we have options. I think you're doing great, Freddie. And I'm not sure I would change a lot, except for to really reframe this for your wife so she feels like you've got tons of options. And you do. So congratulations. And thanks so much for calling. It's awesome. I think you're great. Freddie, Gold Star, here at Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And Mark swears we're going to have to do almost an entire show to clean out the inbox, because they're piling up like crazy. I think we used to do more emails when people were shyer about going on the air with us. But now people seem to want to be on the air with us. And so that leaves the emails piling up. So in an effort to help with the process, I am going to do some emails right now. But if you would like to know what's going on in your financial life, how to get some great financial advice, or just some financial advice. I can't say that it's going to be great, but it's going to be advice. give us a holler. 855-411-JILL is the phone number. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Okay? So here's a question about student loans. Kind of right time of year, you know, people graduating, starting to tally things up. Cheryl says that her kids have student loans and the interest rate is about 6.5%. Is there anything you can do to get a lower rate on these loans? It seems unfair that they should have to pay so much interest. Well, it's not so much interest. It's, you know, it's a pretty decent rate considering that it's an unsecured loan. Do you know what I mean by that? An unsecured loan, like when you borrow money to buy a car or you borrow money to buy a house, there is an asset that is behind it. And when you borrow money for education, there is no asset. There's no underwriting, barely. I mean, it's pretty much, kid applies and gets it. That said, you know, if it's a federal loan and your kid is having a hard time repaying that loan, you could conceivably go and refinance the loan. But, you know, it's hard to know whether that makes sense depending on what's going on in the kid's life, right? So a federal loan, you can go to the one of these government repayment plans. There's income-based repayment. There's something for kids who are working in the public sector who get a deferment. There's all sorts of different processes. Okay. If you don't qualify for that, then you're talking about refinancing with a private lender. And the thing is, if you have a federal loan and you are actually starting to the process of refinancing with a private lender, well, that means that you are then having to give up all those potential options that you might have available to you. So, you know, I don't know. That's not my favorite thing. I really like to have options. Everyone who listens to the show knows that that's my thing. I like options. And if you're in the market for refinancing a student loan, then it becomes, I don't know. I don't know if you're going to gain that much. But essentially, I think it's a good idea to borrow money to go to college. I just think you have to be really careful about how much money you borrow. So, Cheryl, I hope that helps. It's not, it's not ideal. I get that. I do get that. So, all right, let's do another one here. We're doing some emails. Here's a note from Jill, another Jill, who was wanting to respond to the column I wrote about inheritance. And so she says, my girlfriend was in a marriage that was breaking down when she inherited a lot of money right after her mother died. She put the money in the joint account she shared with her husband. They got divorced shortly thereafter, but half the money was now his because apparently when she put it into their joint account, it showed, quote, intent to share. I know that makes sense. When I discuss these things with my friends at the gym, we always say that we feel like information like this should be common knowledge, and it's not. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of folks out there who are making decisions about putting money into joint accounts, sharing joining your finances in a way that doesn't make sense. A lot of times, parents, you should know that the way you leave money to your kids is important because it can become a marital asset once you commingle the money. It's sort of, you know, horrifying to say that because no one plans to actually, think about their money in terms of how they might dissolve a relationship. But it's funny, I will say, I've just written an article, my next article for my column, my Tribune column, my Trunk column, is about prenups. And I know it sounds so unromantic, but you know what? I just feel like these unromantic documents can really be lifesavers later down the road. It's not a great way to, you have to pick your moments when you're going to actually approach this topic. But I would absolutely encourage people to think about it, especially if you've been married before, you've got kids from another marriage. All of these things do come into play. All right. Oh, gosh. I don't know if I have time to do this. How about when we come back, I'll do the other email about our friend Mark, the one who has $35,000 of credit card debt, who says he's asking a question on behalf of his friend. But we, Mark and I know this guy from CBS who we're pals with, and he sends this note, which he literally says, it's for my friend. Mark writes, uh-huh. I don't believe it's him. Do you? You don't think it's the person who wrote the email to you? I don't believe that. You think it's him? Oh, brother. Okay. Well, in that case, I need a whole segment to help out our friend because I love him and I want to help him. And so I'm going to, let's do that when we come back. Okay, Mark, and I'll do that one. Because, oh, it hurts me to even read this email. I'm reading it right now to myself. I'm like, oh, brother. Anyway, how are we going to help this anonymous person with $35,000 of credit card debt? Stay tuned. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. That is Fleetwood Mac. I had that album. And by the way, I had an album. Mark, did you have albums, or are you too young for albums? Did you only have CDs? Okay, so Mark also had albums. Mark, what was the first album that you bought yourself? Mark's first album was Def Leppard, which is scaring me right now that you are my producer. My first album may have been Fleetwood Mac. It's maybe tied for Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, the Elton John double album. Those were my two. Okay. That's what I also, by the way, Mark, just so you know, had 8-track tapes. Put that in perspective. You didn't have that, did you? Yeah, your parents did. They listened to the Carpenters on their 8-track tape. What kind of music did your parents listen to? Sinatra. Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's do this question because our friend A is desperately awaiting the response. If you've got a financial question you want us to help you answer, just send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com, or send us, or just leave us a message, 855-411-JILL. So, hi, Jill, I currently have $35,000 of credit card debt. I've made a lot of poor decisions, and I'd like to make the best one when paying off my debt. My question is, which method is best when consolidating my debt? Using a debt management agency or taking out a personal loan? I've been quoted by InCharge Debt Solutions, which is a nonprofit credit counseling, debt management, and debt consolidation company, a fixed 9.09% APR with a $50 monthly fee for 4 years. I've also been quoted a personal loan from SoFi at 9.95%. Do either have benefits that the other does not? Would either hurt my credit? Could I break up the debt by having some consolidated with the agency, one paid with a personal loan? I have very good credit, no other debts. I own a home. One card has $21,000, one has $8,000, and another one has $6,000. All right. First of all, I need to know what the current interest rates are. And the second thing I need to understand is how this all happened. And the third thing I need to understand is some other pieces of this. How much equity? You say you have, you say that you own a home. Do you have equity in the home? Is it better to refinance your house and then take some extra money out and pay down high interest loans? Why are we turning to personal loans versus that? That's what I'm interested in. Also, What are the interest rates that we're talking about? We're really I just don't have enough information here. So whether this is our friend who actually we know and it's he's asking about himself, or whether it is someone else, I need more details. And I also want to understand, what are those poor decisions that got you into this debt? Not that I want to criticize you for that. I just want to make sure that we are spearheading the effort to ensure that this never happens again. So, unfortunately, I need more information to help you out. I am not a huge fan of these debt consolidation companies because I feel like they're just charging a fee for something you should be able to do, which is pay this damn thing down as quickly as you possibly can. So, more information, please. Okay? Meanwhile, here's Will from New York, who has a total of 5 credit cards, 2 of which he uses on a regular basis. Should he close the other 3? He uses them for recurring payments like cable, the gym, just to keep them active. Should he close the 3 or keep it status quo? Has them from his law school days. I just generally think that if you have credit cards and you're not using them, just throw it into the back of the drawer. You don't have to actually keep them active. You just have to make sure that whenever you do use them, that you're paying them off quickly. And I think there's no reason to close things out because there can be a weird issue that occurs when you do close them. I think that many of these credit reporting agencies are trying to change that because it's kind of it's a dopey thing to think that people have to keep their accounts open when they don't need them. But that said, what I would do is I would find your 2 credit cards and use those ones. Just put the other ones back in the desk drawer and ignore it. Don't close it because I don't want to cause any major action. Okay? All right. Hold on. I'm trying to get this is a longer one. Here's one from Randy who says he's got $1 million or she has $1 million in a traditional retirement account. What would be a reasonable fee to pay a financial advisor to manage it? I enjoy your radio show. Thank you. It depends what that person is doing for you. So if you've got an IRA account, like a traditional IRA, and you want to turn over your money management to that to a person who's going to actively manage your account, plus do full-blown financial planning, plus, you're going to probably pay about 1% of the money every year as a fee. However, if you want to just go to a robo-advisor, like Betterment, the sponsor of my podcast, or Wealthfront, or RebalanceIRA.com, you're going to pay far less. It's just essentially about 0.25% a year. But it depends what you need, Randy. So you're going to pay anywhere between, say, 0.25% to 1.25% a year, depending on whether you want a unique one-on-one relationship with full-blown financial planning, or you just want plain old money management through a resource like a computer-based platform for managing money. All right, hope that helps. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. Hey, stay tuned. We've got an awesome guest, John Alzheimer, back in the house. Nationally recognized expert on credit reporting, credit scoring, and identity theft. I think my favorite thing about John is that he was actually worked for FICO, Equifax, and Credit.com. He's really the only recognized credit expert who actually comes from the credit industry. That's why we love having him on. So that is coming up next. I'm always excited to talk to John. Let's just finish out this hour with a last email. And this is from John, and he and his wife have recently retired. They're locating 1,500 miles back to his home state. And he basically is interested in figuring out kind of how to work with their tax obligations for this year, His wife has got wants to start a home business, and you know, he just wants some generalized financial and tax advice. And he says, I spoke to a few tax planners, but they don't provide advice unless there's a combined net income of $400,000 per year. How do I find a tax planner who's willing to deal with incomes less than $125,000 a year? You know what I would do? I wouldn't worry about a tax planner, but I might go to a fee-only financial planner. And the reason is that you can pay someone by the hour regardless of how much money you have in terms of total assets as well, or how much money you earn. And you would do that by going to the National Association, NAPFA, National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, NAPFA.org. Click in there, get some names. You might do it both in where you live today, but also put in the zip code of where you're moving to. And I would go from there. It may be that you don't need some major league CPA. You really need generalized financial advice. And many of the folks who are both fee-only and even fee-based advisors should be able to help you out. So good luck with that. And thank you, of course, for giving us a shout. All right. Stay tuned. Next hour, we've got John Alzheimer here on the Jill on Money show. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.